For sure.
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 Welcome to another episode of For Sure, a 200-foot podcast. I'm Peter.
I'm Jay. Hey, Peter, did you know the playoffs are still happening? Did you know the nightmare is still currently alive and well? Oh, jeez.
Well, surely Vegas must be out by now, right?
Oh, you don't know.
Come on here, let me check my notes, refresh. Oh, my God, they're still playing.
They're
what?
Still playing.
Oh, yep. My God. How has this happened? I mean, surely it can't be as simple as Marc-Andre Fleury just standing on his head the whole game, right?
Oh, God, he doesn't know. I mean, obviously, we'll dive into that series in due time. But, you know, there's another series happening, Pete, right?
I think
you know, it's not just one series left. We're not talking about the cup final, which means we're obviously referring to the Alexander Ovechkin redemption train running through Tampa, but hitting some mechanical difficulties on the way. what are your thoughts so far? I mean, again, we were all pretty. I think the last time we spoke, they were already up one game, or they were already up 2-0. No. They had barely just finished their previous series. So
Last episode, I don't think the series had even started.
Yeah, so
we're still in the first round. Yeah, or the second round.
So, give us like what's happened. I'm interested to hear your retelling of the events that have led us to this point.
Okay, so the Washington Capitals have apparently decided to find a new way of torturing their fan base, because up until now the Pittsburgh Penguins had been their kryptonite, their nemesis. They had just been the obstacle that the Capitals could not surpass. They had beaten them seemingly in every way possible. This year, we got to see Evgeny Kuznetsov streak down the ice on a semi-breakaway, I think you can call it. He was pretty much past everybody. And he went 5-hole, and then he did his signature bird dance celebration. And the Washington Capitals did it. They beat the Pittsburgh Penguins to go on to the third round, to the Eastern Conference Finals, where they played Tampa. And it looked like that the penguin-sized monkey was finally off of Ovechkin and Backstrom and Holtby, was finally off all their backs. And they went up 2-0 in the series. Not only 2-0, but they won both games in Tampa, meaning that all they had to do was win 2 out of the next 5 games, and they had 3 of them at home. But as we currently record this, the Lightning are up 3-2, having won the last 3 games. And Jay, I'm not sure if you agree with this. I think you probably will. The Washington Capitals have been the better team for the majority of this series. Would you agree with that?
I would definitely agree with that. There's something very, very freeing about conquering a playoff team, right? Like there's nothing more sobering finding out that, oh man, we actually know how to play this game. This is great. And then, you know, you're free to be more creative and branch out. And the Steve Yzerman magic seems to be in a full effect. I'm just very curious because, you know, we're kind of seeing that over in the Jets series as well, where, you know, teams are outperforming but still getting the short end of the stick here. And it's really sad, right? Like, it's just, explain, like, for those who aren't in the know, I mean, like, Washington, you're so close. So close.
Yeah, and, like, in the last game, which was last night, it was pretty much the Lightning's fourth line that really got them to where they were going, really got them through the game, which is Ryan Callahan, Cedric Paquette, and Chris Kunitz. Because we got to see the Lightning and Cedric Paquette score roughly, what was it, 15 seconds in, 20 seconds in, I had just gone back to another tab from my Chromecast to see that it was already 1-0. And I don't even think I had sat down on the recliner yet. So it was not a great start. Not a great start for Washington.
Not great, Bob.
Yeah. Again, especially because Washington, for right or wrong, they have this boogeyman. They have this burden of always choking in the playoffs. And it's kind of one of those things where you had to be thinking, you know, oh boy, here we go again. You know, how are we going to blow it this time? Okay, this is how we're going to blow it this time. But I'll say that the beginning of the game, the Lightning were definitely better. They jumped all over Washington. But then Washington took control. I think I read somewhere that Washington had the last 20 shots of the game. And Ovechkin scored on a one-timer with about a minute and a half left, right around there, from his normal spot after they had pulled the goalie. And then Washington did have some more chances, and they just couldn't get it by, because Vasilevskiy did not look great in the beginning of the series. But since then, he has been what we would have expected from seeing him so far this year.
Well, it's interesting to see at which times these, so they announce all the Vezina nominees, right? In which, I'd like to see if there's any correlation between when the Vezina's nominees are announced and then the immediate performance of said nominees in like the most, in like the game that immediately follows said announcements, because it's interesting, because I think for the most part, all of them, obviously save for Rene right now because he's no longer playing in the postseason. But, there have been performances where it's nice to just be reminded, like, oh, that's why they were nominated. Oh, winning 3 straight after going down 2-0. Oh, that's right. They aren't good. So it is nice to see guys put up and not shutting up. It was kind of funny because the start of the game, the most recent Caps game, so Lightning scores right in front. I'm really surprised there wasn't a giant graphic that said you've lost connection to your opponent. the first ever rage quit in a conference final. That would have been really great. But alas, they still had to play the full game. So. It's not like the other thing where you can just hop on the horse again and start fresh, and then all of a sudden you're down 2-0 with barely a minute into the game. So that's nice. I think it's interesting to see how Ovechkin is. Granted, this is as far as he's been, and think of it in the sense of like the Rookie starring Dennis Quaid, right? It takes forever for you to get to this thing you've always wanted to do. And then you feel that, oh, well, I've put in this amount of time already. It shouldn't be that different. Not so. Once again, mother experience likes to toy with anybody who likes to think themselves actually prepared. It's the Murphy's Law type thing. You defeated one thing. I think it was, Lozo or Roshinsky, but they were basically pontificating that it wasn't the Penguins that Ovechkin was haunted by. It's Marc-Andre Fleury. So, here we are thinking that, Michael Myers is deranged. It's definitely Laurie's not brother. Here we go. And then, oh man, now we have to make 3 more Halloweens.
Oh no, I got stabbed in the back.
Oh no! There's a giant knife in me. But so.
One thing that's interesting is I went on NHL.com to try to find some statistics, and it's really hard to find series statistics on NHL.com, which is not surprising because it's a dumpster fire of a website. So I went to Natural Stat Trick, and if you haven't seen it on the Wingin' and Motown site, I wrote an article about high danger scoring chances and the importance of them. And of course, like I said in the article, it's not as simple as the team that gets the most high danger scoring chances is going to win the game. It's not that simple. But at the same time, the majority of the difference between the goaltenders is in their high danger save percentage. And so looking at the series, the Lightning have the advantage in high danger chance is 4. This is all at 5v5. They also have the advantage in high danger save percentage by 6 points or 6.5 points, which is interesting because the overall save percentage, Washington is better by 0.02. So the overall save percentage is really, really close, but high danger save percentage is 6 points to the Capitals. And so kind of what that tells me is Tampa Bay is making the most of their high danger chances overall over the course of the series, and Washington hasn't been doing so, you know, doing that as much, which I think if you think about watching the game, you know, if you think about the eye test, I do think that matches up. Like that's what I expected to see. That's what I expected the numbers to say based on watching. And so I'm not too surprised to see that. So Washington definitely has a chance. I'm not going to be too surprised if they come back and win. I think at this point, if I was going to bet on it, I would have to bet on the Lightning. But I think I don't think this series is over. It's going to be really interesting because Washington gets to go back home for the next game to try to tie up the series. And obviously, if they do that, then they're going to have the momentum even going into Tampa because they've already won in Tampa twice. So, you know, who's to say they can't do it a third time?
Yeah, I agree. I don't think this is done for sure. I think maybe like at least the first. I'm gonna be really specific here. In the first 4.5 minutes of the next game, will be the great determiner of whether or not the Bolts are gonna try and close this out. Just because you've now expended the energy to go up to take 3 in a row, right? Yeah. And I'm very curious if there's going to be any, you know, I'm not, again, this isn't like a breakthrough question. I'm honestly curious as to whether or not that, you know, I think, like you said, to be outperformed by the opposing team and then win 3 in a row. I mean, I think that certainly has to take something out of you, right? Like it would have to drain you in some respect because, like you're like for 3 games straight now, you've been weathering this onslaught of a Caps team that's been injected with the fountain of life and whatnot, and now you are on this precipice. So, you know, I think we're gonna tell pretty quick whether or not, you know, the Lightning have the energy to maintain that pretty early on. But you know, we were talking, Pete, about teams performing well and all that stuff. But there is another factor about the playoffs that is present. It's not exactly spoken about at length on air, because to do so would probably be tantamount to saying, like, you know, hey, you can't bomb us. Well, we'll bomb you. No big deal. We are, of course, talking about the forever variable, the constant enigma, the unstoppable force against the movable object that is playoffs officiating, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so very recently you and I were watching Puck, right? As yes. We do. And I noticed that in comparison to most of the times we talk, I think there was a very, very big spike between us just saying like, and that's not called, and that's a penalty, or that's not a penalty. I think more often than not, I think I've seen non-calls start to take over the conversation more than calls that should have not, that shouldn't have been called.
Yeah.
And it's really frustrating that we are still, despite literally every major outlet of both fan and professional sports journalism has said, like, why does this double standard exist? How does it go? Were the refs not hugged enough as kids? Or maybe it just seems so weird where you, especially after the lockout, right, where all these different penalties are being enforced to try and open up the game, keep skill, not tie guys up. But now you're seeing just egregious stuff not get called for the sake of we're hockey men. We're not going to let a game get decided because another guy got tomahawked in the shin and he fell down. That's hockey. It's like, no. For 82 games, you told us that wasn't hockey. Now you're saying it is. So,
well, yeah, because I remember the Vegas Golden Knights game, the last one. I remember that we were talking, and I think right before, this is just one example, right before maybe like the last minute or two before that third goal, the one that, the one that broke the tie, there were, I would say, at least three blatant penalties that Vegas took. And I'm not talking regular season blatant. I'm talking playoff blatant. Like, you would expect these to be called in a playoffs, and they weren't. It was just, I don't know. It just seemed crazy that, I don't know. I've always been one to try not to fall into the blaming the refs thing, because it's such kind of like a homerism thing, where no matter who, no matter how unbiased you try to be, if you want one team to win even a little bit, you're going to see the game a little bit differently. Like, your viewpoint is going to be a little bit biased no matter what. But even taking into account that I did want the Jets to win, I don't think I'm being biased there. I think that between the two teams, it really, really seemed that Vegas got away with a ton of really blatant calls that didn't get called. And, you know, even just a couple of them can change the course of a game. And now, I don't want to say that Vegas hasn't been playing well, because they have. But at the same time, I do think that that's obviously going to influence the game. And, you know, going back to the beginning of the playoffs, I know watching the Boston Tampa Bay series, there was a lot of calls in that series that seemed very sketchy. You know, there were some games where Boston fans were like, "Oh my God, are you kidding me?" And then there were other games that Tampa Bay Lightning fans were like, "Oh my God, are you kidding me?" And it seems like the only consistency of the officiating has been that it has been pretty, pretty bad.
Yeah, I agree. And it's, I struggle to see what people are looking at or how this is being evaluated, because, I mean, I'll switch sports for a moment. Learning about how umpires are evaluated for calling balls and strikes and stuff, and it's still a problem. So, like, I don't know what it is about either. I just, at this point, Pete, it'd just be nice if they could just come out with a statement, right? Hey, this is how the playoffs will be played. Or like, make it actually part of the game then, right? Like, think of it like in Greek gladiator things, where you're about to enter the arena. Some of the rules will not be enforced because, well, it looks more fun that way. Right? Yeah, like, right. Whereas this case, it's just like, yeah, everything will get called the same, except in this situation, except against this player, except in this period. I don't know. It's really tough. And you're right. It's tough because this is a situation that doesn't, because it's so labeled as a homerist thing, it's tough to have any constructive and civil discourse about it, because the only thing that people are going to jump to is that you're just mad online about your team not winning, where it's like, no, they're very, I don't get me wrong. Yes. I like the Jets. I would like them to beat the Vegas Golden Knights, but they're certainly not my favorite team. You know, I've already pledged an allegiance to a favorite team, you know, and between the two, yes, I'm going to watch and, you know, hey, it's good spirited hockey, throw the chase, da da da. But just seeing very noticeable things not get called, you're like, you almost feel like you're being gaslit a little, right? You're like, but I just saw you, like, how is that, like, is the intended lesson supposed to be that when playoff hockey is what's currently happening, you don't want a soft call or a call that would anger people the most to decide the game, where it's like, just call the game as you've been calling it for the entirety of your reffing career. You're already going to get booed anyway, right? You're going to get booed because sports fans are beings of pure, unfiltered emotion. But at the end of the day, at least you're covering your end of things, because you're like, listen, it was a slash. I called a slash. What do you want from me, right? Or it's like, oh, I could have called a slash, but it's the playoffs and nobody wants
exactly. Yeah, so if you agree with us, if you think that the series have been officiated poorly overall, then feel free to jump into the comments and let us know what you think. All right, so we are going to go to our interview for this episode. We have a really great interview. We've already recorded it, so I can tell you that for sure. It is with Dylan Galloway of Future Considerations, which is a prospect ranking organization, and I think you're going to really like it. We got into a lot of really good stuff, both league-wide and specifically for the Red Wings. All right, so when we come back, we'll have that for you. All right, our guest today is Dylan Galloway. He is the head scout of Eastern Canada for Future Considerations, covering the NHL draft. He's also a video tracker for the London Knights. Just to make sure we don't forget at the end, you can find him on Twitter at Dylan Galloway _. So it's DylanGallowAy. And then there's an _ at the end. All right, Dylan, how are you doing today?
Good, thank you. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Yeah, we're really excited because, like we say a lot, you know, this podcast is dedicated to the entire NHL. But since we started off through Winging It in Motown, we have a lot of Red Wings fans that listen to us. And this year, more than any other year in some people's lifespan who are listening to this, people are caring a lot more about the entry draft. Last year, obviously, we had the highest pick we've had in a very long time, but this year the pick is even better. So we're going to get to some stuff that will relate to questions that our fans have, but we're just going to start off with our general kind of bio thing. So basically, how did you get into hockey first of all? And then how did you get to where you are now?
So I actually got into hockey through a friend. He started working for, so Levi Hale, I'll give him a shout out. He started working for a company called Pacific Force Sports. It's a sports agency from Calgary. So they're a boutique sports agency, and he got in being kind of like a recruiter and a scout for them in Ontario. And when I was in high school and when I was in my undergrad at Western University, I always knew that I wanted to work in hockey. And when I found out that he started working with this, with his agency, I just messaged him out of the blue. He's like I said, he's a friend of a friend. And so when I messaged him, I just said, "Hey, could we get coffee and, you know, tell me a little bit about this." Anyway, long story short, I ended up getting in contact with the head agent and kind of started off from there, just filling out game reports and sending in scouting reports on various guys from minor midget, in the London area. And so after that, I was at Pacific Force Sports for about a year and a half, 2 years. And it's pretty tough in the sports agency world, especially if you're a really, really new agency, which is what Pacific Force Sports was and still is a little bit. I don't know if they have any NHL players quite yet. They're still like working on that. But then I got a message from Dan DeShane, who worked for Future Considerations. At the time, he was the head Ontario scout, and he now works for a USHL team as a scout. Mm-hmm. And so I auditioned kind of for them and have been working with Future Considerations ever since. So that's kind of how I got into it.
Nice. Well, hey, once again, folks, listen up. It's not what you know, it's who you know.
Yeah.
And what you know.
And well, let me finish my poor pun. Good Lord. Anyways, Dylan, that's fantastic. So sticking with the, you know, career trajectory thing, when you're looking at how players are being developed and then, you know, how they usually end up. I mean, so right now, and for those listening at home, I actually am really excited because, and this may be the first thing that I've uttered out loud. Believe me, it'll all make sense after this really stupid intro to what I'm about to ask. So Dylan has an NDA, which if you're paying attention to current events, you should know what an NDA is, I just about to call them the Golden Knights. That's terrible. With the Ontario London Knights, and I don't know if I have a question that would make him infringe upon that, but just in case I do ask something like that, Dylan, we want to give you a chance to have like a context answer where it's like, hey, it's really rainy outside, meaning, ooh, I can't really ask that. I can't really answer that. Or, oh, and then obviously if it isn't, you can answer it to the best of your ability. So now that that's out of the way, why do you choose to work for a team that created the monster that is Corey Perry? Is that
you know, it was kind of like, again, luck of the draw. It's just who you know on Twitter. And I messaged sorry, I'm forgetting his name now. I have to go through my messages quickly.
This is what happens when you work with people, Corey Perry. Your mind gets warped.
Sorry, I messaged Paul Simpson on Twitter. They were just looking for video trackers, and it's just, you know, hockey's a hard thing to get into, and any route that you can take to get into this world. I noticed there was a lot of questions about asking about how you get into the hockey world, and it is a little bit about who you know, but it's also, you know, you got to put in the effort and kind of stick your neck out there a little bit. So I just messaged them on Twitter and said, I hear you guys are looking for video trackers. Can I do that for you? And then after like a little phone interview, ended up being able to do that. And really all I do is, as far as I think I can say, I just watch game tapes of OHL teams and track things that happen on the ice. I can't go into what I track, but you know,
it's rainy outside.
It is a little bit starting to rain a little bit.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Just like a follow up to the, you know, because like you said, you know, I know you had a chance to read through some of the mailbag questions, and you know, not surprisingly, you know, like when we had Craig Custance on, there was a couple of people like, you know, hey, I want to write for a site like The Athletic, you know, how do I do that? You know, like, I mean, it's a pretty standard question, but I'm, you know, I'm glad that people ask it. So let's say, and I know this is it's kind of similar. I listened to this podcast called Script Notes, which is about screenwriting.
Okay.
Because I'm an English teacher, I like to write, and I teach an elective in screenwriting, and people always ask like these two guys. Like one of them is the guy that wrote like Hangover 2 or 3 or whatever. You know, he's written a lot of like kind of like the broad comedies, and the other guy wrote Big Fish and Go. So they're, you know, they're both very accomplished screenwriters, and every screenwriter they have on the podcast has a different route to get to where they are. So I know it's something you can't just like, there's not like one answer, but let's say somebody's, you know, sitting at home and they want to, you know, their final goal is to get to where you are, or you know, or even beyond that.
Yep.
So they have access to, you know, let's say they have either through video, you know, either through like online or through TV, you know, they can watch either NHL games or minor games or whatever, and they can sit down and they can do stuff. So like, what would you recommend that they start to do so that when they reach out to somebody and they say, okay, what do you got? They're like, okay, here's what I have.
Yeah. So Hockey.tv is a really good resource. We have it at Future Considerations, and you can just watch various like USHL. I don't think the CHL is on there quite yet, but various junior leagues and stuff like that. But really just start writing things down. When I started at Pacific Four Sports, I mean, I played minor hockey, but I played like house league and at most rep B. So it's not like I'm coming from a background of having played the game. I'm also not an analytics, you know, like I'm not a computer boy. So I'm also not coming from that perspective. But just starting to write things down and recognizing what you like in players, and then talking to other people. One of the things that everybody recommended to me when I was coming up, to get to the point where I'm at right now, and what I'll continue to recommend to other people, is it's important to get into the ranks. If there's a team around you that has prospects that are, you know, going to be NHL eligible or USHL eligible, NTDP eligible, CHL eligible, any of those prospects, just go to the rink. You'll see the scouts up in the corners of the rinks. Just sit around them. If there's showcases around you, every September there's a showcase in Toronto. Actually, not a showcase. It's a minor tournament, and it's called the Toronto Titans Tournament, and it kicks off the GTHL season. There's a lot of OHLers that come out of the GTHL and obviously move on to become NHL players, like PK Subban, Stamkos. They were both, I believe, on the Junior Canadians in the GTHL. So just going and watching those players and writing things down, getting in the rink, kind of getting your face recognized a little bit, and then you'll start to see guys with team jackets on for OHL teams or NHL teams. And just talking to them. They're usually fairly approachable. Sometimes there's a little bit of an old boys club feel going on, but and then beyond that, if you want to get more recognized and you know, have people start to recognize you and trust that you know what you're saying, start writing things on a blog. That's another way of doing it. Scouting on Twitter. I think his Twitter handle is like a mix between scouting and couching, because he watches a lot of the games online.
That's beautiful. And, I'm writing that down perfect. As we speak.
I'm so jealous that he was able to grab that. But he watches a lot of game online and through, I believe, Hockey TV and just various streams. And if you go read his blog, he's really good and smart and has a lot of really good opinions. So it's really just working on your voice and finding success in players. So if you really like something about this one player and he continues to move on and becomes successful, well, what did you see in that player that made him successful? Because obviously you recognize something.
Sure.
So I think just practicing that really, really helps. And you do need to be dedicated to it because it can be a little bit demanding. So just having the work ethic to be able to get to the games or watch games and sit down and write things down.
Well, there you have it, folks. Once again, another profession where you have to put the work in to succeed. We know you were expecting something different, but once again, we have to preach that, you know, learning your craft, being dedicated to it, reaching out, building connections, networking, the magical word of the interconnectivity sphere. Yeah, so
sorry to drop so many cliches on you guys.
No, it's fine. Yeah.
No. We don't want anybody to listen to this and think that there's some, you know, 7-Eleven quick fix to just be the tracker of secret underdealings with the London Knights. Okay. So on the subject of practicing things and then also getting a good eye for when you see something, one of our other reader questions, I have no idea how to pronounce this. It's MKELONN, Michelob. I'm sorry, it's not an easy thing to read, but I think they have a good question, especially speaking to your point about, you know, learning and watching and, you know, finding some it factors. So at what age, in your opinion, do you see if a kid's going to be a stud? And then, you know, kind of as a follow-up, and I'm actually more interested in the second part of this, is where I think we are I'm really upset that we are sprinting towards a future where if a child 2 weeks out of the womb cannot do an inside out deke and go top shelf on a National Hockey League goalie, they're never going to make it. They're not going to make it to the NHL. And it's really frustrating, but I'd like to think that that's still a ways off. But as it stands right now, this person also mentioned in their question how in Sweden, there's currently a debate about kids have to make it at age 14, yeah, 15, and like, at 14 and 15, the only thing I was concerned about making was like mac and cheese and, you know, trying to make the coolest picture of Wolverine at the time to try and show off to friends. So, so at what age do you think is like the part where eyebrows start to raise? And then beyond that, you know, how often do kids, like, you know, what's like the latest you've seen someone kind of develop, as it were?
Yeah, so I actually have a couple of interesting stories about this. There's two kids, each back-to-back. So one is going to be drafted this year, most likely. His name's David Levin. And there's another guy, Greg Murielis, and his draft year was last year, but I believe he'll get drafted this year as a second round or as a second opportunity draft eligible. So Greg Murielis, I saw him in his bantam year. So he was about 13, and this was the first year that I was scouting for Pacific Four Sports. And so I inquired about whether he had an agent, and he had already had an agent for a year. And this kid was 13.
Wow.
And then, so watching him on the ice, he was absolutely fantastic. I watched him pull off moves that some NHLers dream of, just inside out on defenders. And, you know, he looked like the next McDavid in this one particular game that I remember. And he didn't get drafted last year. So the fact that he looked so good at a young age and then it seemed like people kind of caught up, I don't think that there's a golden age that, you know, kids just kind of figure it out. Like if a kid is really good at such a young age and then everybody else kind of catches up to him, well, is that because he's not working hard, or is that because he actually wasn't that good and just had a size advantage? Greg Murielis is still extremely fast. I still believe he should be drafted. But you know, he isn't as highly offensive. So did he just like not figure it out? Was he not, did not have the hockey smarts? There's a lot that goes into becoming an NHL player. And it's really hard thing to do and really hard thing to see from such a young age. David Levin, on the other hand, he was playing in Israel. He was playing, I believe, roller hockey. He came over here. He moved over here again, I believe, in his bantam year. And that was, I believe, from what I've heard, that was one of the first times he strapped on skates and played organized ice hockey. And he was 13, 14. Right. So yeah, a completely different path. And this is his first draft year. Now, when we saw him in his minor midget year a few years ago, he was fantastic. And he was the first overall selected for the OHL to the Sudbury Wolves. And now he's probably going to be fifth round. So again, highly touted player in the OHL draft, and then kind of lost it a little bit. I mean, he is playing on Sudbury, so it's a little bit tough. They're not known to be a very good team. But, you know, again, two different paths of kids who one had been playing for a long time and had the look of a really high quality, fantastic player. And the other one, you know, hadn't strapped on skates and played organized hockey his entire life up until he came to Canada. I'm of the personal belief that you need to be doing a lot more than just playing hockey. I don't think that that's a good route to a true NHLer. You need to be able to do a lot of different things, and hockey isn't the end all be all. So I think that there's a lot of different paths, and it's really hard to see how certain players get to where they are, because like you said, even for scouting, it's so many different paths. There's so many different ways to get into this. And for prospects, it's very much the same thing. You know, if you're really good at baseball, maybe you have really good hand-eye coordination, so your puck skills are really good, and stuff like that. So I don't know if that answers the question.
No, I think it definitely does.
I think it definitely does. Yeah.
Long-winded way of answering the question, maybe.
That's what we're about here on for sure. Long-winded, for sure.
For sure.
Yeah, I mean, I thought that one of the things that you said was really interesting to me, because I'm a high school tennis coach, and we had a kid come out last season who'd never played tennis before, but he was a baseball player. Mm-hmm. And so he had really good hand-eye coordination. You know, he was used to swinging something, and, you know, he had really good footwork because he was used to kind of quick steps. Absolutely. Playing baseball. Yeah. And he picked up tennis in like a couple of days. Whereas I get other kids come in who never played, and it takes them weeks to, you know, really hit the ball over the net consistently.
Absolutely.
So I think there is a lot to be said for not just, if you know, if you want to be a hockey player, not only playing hockey 365 days a year.
Yeah.
you know, partially because, you know, we started to see that people get hurt a lot more because of the repetitive, you know, the repetitive motion. Mm-hmm. Whereas if they're playing another sport, they get to exercise different muscles in different ways and stuff. So, okay. So I have a two part question, and I think the first part is hopefully pretty quick. If not, then that would be pretty interesting. But so leading into this draft, and obviously we still got a little ways to go, but leading into this draft, it seems like the general consensus is that Rasmus Dahlin is, you know, the number one pick, you know, definitely. Mm-hmm. From what I understand, it's, you know, from what I've been reading, it seems like Svechnikov and Zadina are the next two. Most people have pretty much everybody I've seen has Svechnikov second and Zadina third. And then it seems like there's kind of like a not necessarily a drastic drop off, but it seems like most people agree that like those two are better than the next players coming up.
Yeah.
So the first part is that pretty much it? And then the second part, this is more like a Detroit thing, because I noticed when I was reading the Future Considerations draft preview, which I'll give you a quick plug for. It's I think $19.99 Canadian, yep. Which I got it in America and it was like $16. I get it every year and it's lots of really good stuff in there. So definitely give that a look.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah. So I read in your section, you talked a lot about Evan Bouchard. And so the Red Wings are picking sixth. It seems likely, you know, those are probably going to be the first three. Then you got Tkachuk, Wahlstrom, probably unless one of those four or five teams wants to take a defenseman. Mm-hmm. So do you think, because we got like Bouchard, we got Quinn Hughes, we got Bockfist, Ty Smith, I think, is in that mix. Do you think that there's one defenseman in that group that you think is noticed like even a little bit better? Because they all seem to kind of be shuffling around in draft ranking.
Yeah.
So I was curious about that.
So one thing that I would say is that when looking at the age of these players, Bouchard is a lot closer to having been drafted last year rather than this upcoming draft. And Bockfist, his birthday is much closer to the cutoff of this draft year. So he's much younger in terms of this draft class. So you have like almost another full year of development on Evan Bouchard. Not to say that he's not as good. It's just, you know, he gets another full year essentially of development. So that's definitely one thing that I always take into consideration. But Evan Bouchard is an excellent defenseman. He has this innate ability to find passes that even as a scout, he's one of those kids, and this is a complete cliche, but you kind of question what he's doing. It looks like he's just giving away the puck, and all of a sudden a forward just kind of appears out of nowhere, grabs the puck and goes down the ice. And it's absolutely incredible to watch. Another thing that he is incredibly capable of doing is getting tip-ins from the point. He's got this a little bit of a floater of a wrist shot, and he finds these seams to allow his forwards who are covering the goalie to just tip it in. So that's what I love about him. He just finds these incredible ways of getting the puck up the ice and getting it on net and creating scoring chances. Bockfist is a little bit smaller. And again, the other thing, just looking at handedness, if a team needs right-handed defensemen, which we know is a hot commodity in the NHL at this point, this draft is full of them. You've got Bockfist, Bouchard, who else is in there?
Noah Dobson,
yep. And Bode Wild, he's another good option there too. But Bockfist, from what I've heard, and I don't get to see a lot of him because he's over in Europe, so I'd have to defer to the European scouts on that one. But you know, small offensively minded defenseman, again, kind of gets the puck up the ice and will get it on net. So I would, if I'm Detroit and Bockfist and Bouchard are there, honestly, I'm probably going with Bockfist. Just that the edge goes to Bockfist just based on the extra year of development that he gets to have because of his age.
Cool. Yeah. Cause I know for a lot of Red Wings fans have been looking at Quinn Hughes, partially because of the obvious local connections, but also because from what I've been reading, it seems like he seems to be better than the other options in terms of skating. Like, it seems like his skating is unbelievable.
Yeah. I would say that maybe him and Bockfist are a little bit closer than Bouchard is on the skating. Bouchard is a little bit, not that he's a bad skater. He's just not as, I don't know. It's hard to describe. He's a little bit more laid back than the other ones. But yeah, Quinn Hughes is obviously a really good option. But again, October 14th, I believe, is his birthday, 1999. So again, you have that disparity in the age gap, but and he also shoots left. So again, if you have a right shooting defenseman that's a year younger, I might be inclined to go with that guy just because it is such a right-handed defenseman is such a hot commodity in the NHL. But sure. Quinn Hughes is a good option, and he is a really good skater. So it's his straightaway speed, I believe, that's his so much different than the other ones. And he just gets up the ice really, really quick.
Cool.
We all enjoy getting up the ice pretty quick, right, Pete? I'm trying to remember the last time a leisurely stroll up ice was something a coach was commending players for. So Dylan, based on, you know, what you've seen so far, and we all know that, you know, there is the popular conception or popular belief that, you know, when it comes to NHL drafts, there is a stark drop between like a number one versus a number five and whatnot. So I feel like this type of question is always like, it's almost an unanswerable question due to just the way literally the hockey universe works. So are there any underrated players that you can go? I mean, yes, at the end of the day, we are Red Wings fans and we all like to tout like, hey, we found Datsyuk, you know, behind a tree somewhere. And then we found Zetterberg, you know, having a milkshake at the diner where nobody was looking. Right. But, you know, obviously everybody's got more exposure. Everybody's looking everywhere now. But, you know, in these days, my other further question is it possible to be underrated now? I mean, it's strange because you're going to get drafted. And then depending upon how your skills fit into an organization, they're obviously going to focus their development to accent what you're able to do. So, so for this draft specifically, but then, you know, if you feel like it, maybe in broader terms, I mean, in terms of being underrated in a draft, you know, who do you think is, you know, kind of like, oh, okay, well, I'm kind of surprised they're that low, or, you know, I guess it's tough to tell obviously ahead of time because the draft has yet to happen, but
yeah. So one of the things that goes into that too, is you'll watch kids fall during draft day. And so if somebody starts to fall and then was rated, you know, top 25, but falls to, you know, 40 or something like that. Well,
yeah.
Was there a reason why he fell so far? And was he overrated before? And now he's, you know, about where he's supposed to be. I think one of the guys that I find to be not underrated, I guess, at this point, because so many people have latched onto him as being one of the underrated players that he's now probably rated like where he's supposed to be, is Liam Foudy. And again, London Knights guy. Sorry, everybody, but I'm just going to keep harping on the London Knights because they're a really good team. but he came onto the scene this year and just kept going and going. I didn't love him at the beginning of the year. He was kind of buried on the London Knights, and then they traded away, I think, three or four of their top five players on the team, including Robert Thomas, who's going on to compete for another Memorial Cup. But once they got rid of all those players and he was able to get all this ice time, he just springboarded up the draft rankings. His speed is just ridiculous. He's got quick step, and not only that, but he can think at that speed too. I know that Detroit has drafted these kind of guys in the past few years, really, really quick, Athanasiou and Larkin. But not everybody can think at that speed. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Teemu Pulkkinen was one of those types of guys who actually had really good speed, but his hands couldn't quite keep up with where his feet were going.
Yeah, he never really seemed to like find a place.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think Xavier
but it's funny you mention that because like I guess I'm just confused because wait, what you're saying is ice time helps a player develop?
Oh, it's weird, isn't
it? Like you're saying how like if a player is given an opportunity to play and evolve that they'll get better? This goes against all the things that I've seen from my net from my popular club. Are you sure this isn't one of those it's rainy outside questions you're not allowed to answer? It sounds like groundbreaking information.
No, it's yeah. it's kind of weird, isn't it? Not just keeping a guy down on the fourth line to get him on the NHL team, you know? So yeah, it's kind of strange. Getting a guy some ice time makes him a better player.
you know, Pete, this is the most revealing and important interview we've ever done. So glad we know this now.
I mean, like the next thing we know, we're going to be hearing about how you should keep players together for more than two shifts.
You're talking about chemistry. Hey, the last time I heard about chemistry, it's don't do it. Otherwise, you're going to burn your eyebrows off, kid. So I want nothing to do with chemistry.
Yeah, if guys don't have chemistry in the first 4 minutes that they're on the ice together, then it's probably not going to work, eh?
Exactly, right? All right, so the fun thing is that a lot of the questions in our mailbag have been answered just in the course of our conversation so far. So I'm just jumping around to see if there's other ones. Cause like I always say, we always like to have people sending questions. Sometimes we're not able to really get to them just because of the way the conversation goes. Mm-hmm. But this one. Yeah. So Anthony C. U. has a question where he says,
I saw that. It was clever name.
Yeah. We kind of talked about this a little bit and I agree on the name. It's a cool name. So are there any players that you see because Detroit's going to have, a pick right at the end of the first round and right at the beginning of the second round. So we have two really, you know, almost like end of the first round picks. Mm-hmm. So are there any players that you see that you think will be available right around there that you think have the potential to be, you know, like are those kind of like really high ceiling players, but maybe it's more of a risk?
Yeah. So I was talking about this with another one of our scouts and I see Ty Dellandrea in a Detroit uniform, just the way he plays. He's got a very underrated shot. He's extremely hardworking. He's just a complete two-way player. I think he's got a lot more to give. He's playing on Flint. So again, not a fantastic team. So I think he's got a lot more to give. And I think with some really like high-end development, he could be maybe not top line, but like a really, really good second line center. Wow. I see a lot of like development in his game over the season. And he's really, really smart, really strong. Got good speed. And I just think that his shot is really underrated. He just like rips it into the net sometimes. So I think, so Detroit's got what the 33rd pick. He should be there on the board. And I don't see any reason why they don't take him there. I think he fits in perfectly with them and could grow to be like a solid contributor in the top six.
Yeah.
Also, we have a shortage of cool names. Yeah. So I'd be down for that. Dylan, being a London night person, I first of all have to give a compliment because I feel like one of the London Knights logo. I mean, you said you listened to a couple episodes, so I'm the resident like hockey team look jersey aficionado czar, as it were, and I really like the London Knights logo because it almost reminds me of the demonic furnace from Home Alone, just the way the helmet has okay. the slats to open. So congratulations on that for having a really nice logo to work with. Very recently, I mean, I guess this is maybe just like a, hey, did you see this recently? Someone showed me a tweet. It was, I don't know if it was from the IHF or if it was the IHF that tweeted it, but they were showing this tracking tech that was basically an overhead view of the rink with all the players, got circles around them, and then very close to live pass tracking. And I mean, as Peter knows, I'm an avid fan of NHL. I like NHL 18. I like playing the overhead style and just being able to see the whole ice. That stuff was far out. And I don't know, like, is that where, like, we're trying to get to? Is that the level of tracking that we think that we would like to get to at some point to give a better plan? Or is this like a novelty and everyone's just going to keep calling us hockey computer boys?
As far as I know, there aren't any OHL teams or CHL teams that have anything close to that. I did see that tweet and it was amazing and incredibly cool. I believe Sportsnet or Sport Logic has something similar to that type of player tracking. They use some sort of machine learning that is able to like create the player. And that is totally where hockey needs to go. This whole bio tracking and tracking a player. And I think, you know, seeing the efficiencies in players skating and the efficiencies in how they move their body up and down the ice and the efficiencies in how they move as like kind of, it kind of looked like an organism a little bit.
Yeah.
I honestly,
it's an amoeba.
Yeah,
it sees a threat and it must absorb it and take it out.
Yeah, that is absolutely where I see the next kind of big breakthroughs in analytics. I mean, I don't have any sort of insider information or knowledge to that going anywhere, but yeah, that's definitely where things should go for sure. I think it's a part of the game that you can't show a lot of people, unfortunately, right now. So yeah, I think we could do a lot better in that. And
I'm really kind of sad that this technology did not exist in the early aughts. If only then we could have either decided maybe Michael Samuelson or Robert Lang aren't the best choices. Just in terms of just floating, because the way that video showed the players, like you could almost, I thought it was really easy to identify the guys that are just kind of maybe, you know, granted, I know there's a bit of a chess game involved, like you'll purposely sit back a little bit on plays, watch them develop, and then try to position yourself correctly. But like, I feel like if they just tracked that for like any one game between like 2000 and 2004, and like they just sit Robert down and be like, this is what you're doing. Why are you doing this? Please stop.
Yeah.
Or like on the Capitals power play, it'll be like just Ovechkin. It'll like burn into the screen. Yeah, just...
it's like blind, like this like solid red dot. You know, like any, if you have to look at that footage, it has to be on a monitor that doesn't have to get plasma recalibrated because it'll look like did someone put ketchup on the TV?
All right, so I have one last question, and this has been an awesome conversation. So like I said before, there is the future consideration guide that you can purchase, and so I'm sure you probably can't tell me everything, but like, how do all of you who work for Future Considerations go about ranking these players? Like what's that process like?
It's actually really interesting. So I this season, I just became the head scout of Eastern Canada, like kind of halfway through the season. So this was my first season being kind of on the inside of all of that. We use Slack to kind of communicate across the globe. And it's interesting to see, we break ourselves off into certain regions. And then certain guys have certain players that they just really like. So as a scout, you have to be really confident in your ability to know what a player is going to be or you know, have confidence in your eye. So it can get a little testy sometimes, where guys are really fighting for players and guys are saying like, no, I think this guy's, it has to go here. So there is quite a bit of a lengthy discussion, talking about, even just minor details. You know, this guy needs to go in the 40 to 50 range rather than the 50 to 60 range, or, 55 to 60 rather than, you know, 62. So it can be a little bit funny, right? That way, where guys just have certain players that they're just locked onto. But it's really just like a wide open discussion between all of our scouts. And then as head scouts, we all get together and kind of organize our own regions and then fight for certain players to be ranked in certain spots. So it is a really interesting discussion, and it can be hard because, you know, I don't see every single player that we rank. And neither do any of our other head scouts. You know, we're ranking, I think it was like something close to 300 players this year. It's not really feasible for you to see every single player. You kind of have to trust the other guys who have seen those players to know what they're talking about and have discussion, open discussion, saying, no, like, this guy, his skating is just that much better, or is super elite. But
yeah, I mean, it's funny because that's pretty much how I guess it worked, or, you know, at least for the most part. So thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it. Like I said before, if you want to follow Dylan on Twitter, you can find him at Dylan Galloway. It's two L's and there's an underscore at the end. I was just looking while we were talking, and apparently the person who got your screen name without the underscore, he only tweets twice a month. So I think
I looked him up too.
Yeah. I mean, if you want, we can start a campaign to get him to have to switch names with you. But
I'll do it. I'll make a logo. I'll make a viral video. I'll do it. And Pete, I'm so glad you brought it up because, again, we are not only bringing on phenomenal guests, but apparently like galaxy brain guests who thought ahead of time, like, I'm going to get this handle because someone else is probably going to want it, but they're going to have to put like 8 asterisks and like a couple of special characters to make it look like it. So I know you don't have the clean Dylan Galloway, but I mean, an underscore, that still counts. You have, it's clean. It's straightforward. I mean, you know, the Dylan guy, I'm sure, wasn't as attractive, and it's nice to have the full name and stuff. So, you know, I look forward to listening to this years from now where like all of my kids will have like XXX. I like to play another XXX. Hockey is so
look
cool.
Like those old,
and then like 6969420.
Look like those old MSN names that people used to have with all the you know, boyfriends' names and the stars and the squiggly lines.
Yeah. Like the one with the emoji where he's pushing down his sunglasses.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
That's my email. That's my internet persona.
All right, Dylan. So thank you so much for stopping by.
Yeah, thanks guys for having me on. This was a lot of fun.
All right. So yeah, another great interview on For Sure. So thanks again to Dylan Galloway for stopping by. It was definitely awesome talking to him about prospects and the draft and all of that good stuff. So before the interview, we talked about the Eastern Conference Finals. Now we're going to talk about the Western Conference Finals. The series is now over. We waited to record this segment until after Game 5, just in case what happened ended up happening, which is the Vegas Golden Knights are going to the Stanley Cup final. And I think if I had predicted that before the season started, I think a lot of listeners would have stopped listening because it would have been like, why do I need to listen to this guy? Also, another thing that most people wouldn't have predicted going into the season is that the winning goal of the Western Conference final was scored by Ryan Reeves, assisted by Lucas Spiva and Tomasz Noshek. Just as we all predicted, obviously. Jay, so what were your thoughts on this series?
Well, we all know that I was a pretty staunch supporter of the team from Winnipeg. The Jets deserved this, but for some reason, the universe has seen fit to turn the anything can happen dial so far past 11 that, it's the knob's broken. The nozzle's been destroyed. The doors have swung both ways. The particle flow is completely out of flux. We're in the upside down. Everything is awful.
Dogs and cats living together.
Dogs and cats. So I'm, you know, the first two games, I was like, okay, this should be a fun series. I was thinking it was going to go every other game, kind of like the way the Pred series was. But, you know, I mean, we spoke about it earlier that there's, you know, I'm going to say at least one of these games could have gone a little bit differently had officiating been a little bit more sharp. But, you know, this isn't going to be, hey, let's find ways to trash the Knights. I mean, I watched a post game interview already, and they Scott Oak was like, you know, this team of cast offs and stuff. And I was like, you know what? Let's first dispel a very important fact about all this. The league forced 30 teams to cut people. Okay, so this isn't 30 teams deciding to throw these players away, and you're talking about putting GMs against each other, saying, hey, you know, who in our organizational pipeline do we deem the most worthy to be protected? And then you just leave. And like, so there's so few protections in the first place. I just feel like sometimes the narrative gets thrown out of whack just a little bit when you're like, yeah, these teams were like, you make it sound like every GM looked at every of the players that they exposed, like with already their bags packed, like, get out of my house, leave, yeah. You know? So in that regard, it's like, I wouldn't call them cast offs. I would call them guys who are now suddenly playing for the Stanley freaking Cup. So,
yeah. And I mean, like, yeah. You know, like, let's not forget that some general managers made very, very poor decisions. We're looking at you, Florida, who basically said, hey, yeah. we are going to force you to take player A by giving you player B. And player A and B are going to be 2/3 of your top line. You know, I mean, yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that it isn't an accomplishment, because of course it is. But the crazy thing, the scary thing is that Vegas could have actually put together a better team with the players that they had available. But yeah, at the same time, I mean, you have to give them credit. Kind of like we talked about in the segment on officiating, I think there was at least one game, if not more, where it seemed like the Knights definitely got away with a lot more penalties than the Jets did. But this past game, I mean, the Jets had their chance on the power play. It wasn't like they didn't get chances. They did. But the Jets power play apparently took some lessons from Detroit, in which you must have 15 passes before you shoot, because I don't like it. It seemed like there was no sense of urgency. It was just very, very kind of confusing that yep. a team that must score at that point to keep themselves alive, they're just kind of just shooting it around, passing around. They didn't really seem to care, which is, I don't know, kind of strange. But to go back to what I talked about with the Eastern Conference Final, I went on Natural Stat Trick and looked this up. And again, I wasn't too surprised to see this, that the high danger chances for was actually Winnipeg had more high danger chances for the whole series, but the high danger goals for percentage was 70% to 30% for Vegas. Winnipeg, their shooting percentage on these high danger chances was 5%, whereas Vegas shot 17.5%. And then the last stat for this is that Winnipeg's high danger save percentage was 82.5, whereas Vegas was 95. So it's not quite as simple as saying that the reason that Vegas won was Marc-Andre Fleury, but it's not too much more complicated than that. Marc-Andre Fleury has had himself an incredible playoff. He had an incredible series this series. I remember there was a save with about 3 minutes and 50 seconds left in the third period today, where I was like, oh, yes, they're going to score. Oh, and it was just an incredible, incredible save by Fleury. So, you know, Vegas deserves it. And so, Jay, what do you think? Do you think that that the Stanley Cup final is going to be the Stanley Cup is going to be handed to the Vegas Golden Knights? Or do you think that whoever comes out of the East is going to emerge victorious?
I forget which Dom said it, so apologies to the Dom that I don't credit this to, but props to the Dom that I think I'm crediting this to, either Filipovich or Luz Chisholm. But they said when Vegas, on the opening night where they hang up their Stanley Cup banner and they lose that game, everybody gets to say, I told you it can't be sustained.
Yeah. So,
I think all bets are off right now. And, you know, I think given the way Tampa's playing, you know, if Tampa went, if Tampa closes out Washington, I have to say of the teams remaining, I think Tampa would be the hardest that Vegas would face in order to get to the Cup. I just don't – like if Washington happens to pull it out, I don't think Washington has a chance.
Yeah, I think this is hard because I always bet against Vegas, and so far every single time I've been wrong. And it's kind of like that gambler's fallacy thing that like, well, you know, it's come up heads 17 yep. times in a row, so yep. – it's got to be tails this time. But I mean, I don't know. I'm just going to, I'm going to keep on doing it. I'm going to stick with my guns. And I think that whoever comes out of the East is going to win, but I don't know. It's tough because I was going to pick Winnipeg against whoever came out of the East, and Vegas beat Winnipeg. So I'm going to stick with, I think you're right. I think Tampa's going to come out of the East, and I think Tampa's going to beat Vegas. The reason for that is because I think Tampa has a goalie that can match Fleury in terms of standing on his head. Yep. And plus I think I think Tampa's power play is going to be able to cut through the Vegas penalty kill in a way that for some reason Winnipeg's wasn't, which doesn't make a lot of sense. So I'm going to go with, yeah, I'm going to stick with whoever comes out of the East, which I think is going to be Tampa, is going to beat Vegas. And I guess we'll have to see.
Yes, we will, Peter. Damn it. Okay, so, you know, it is the playoffs. Those are the main storylines. It's not too much happening. Yeah, there's draft talk, and, you know, we've talked at length about, you know, what our expectations are for the league and then for our respective teams as well. But that doesn't mean other interesting things aren't popping up in the NHL news feed. And there's one thing that caught my eye, and I think it's an interesting debate. I know I have some feelings about it. I think Peter has some feelings about it as well. And the beauty part is maybe we don't agree, which means, you know, more likes and views, right? Right, Pete? a lot of disagreements. That's what sells the bacon, right? So anyways, recently there was a episode of the podcast with Jeff Merrick and Elliot Friedman. And he was bemusing the trend that is happening with athletes and video games. For those in Detroit, this is nothing new, as we all remember. Fire breather Joel Zumaya was the center of controversy as being a bit of too much of a Guitar Hero player, to the point where he was actually injured and while playing this rocking out game, and it was funny. It was kind of a head scratcher. Even the game so far. The game went in so far as to call Zumaya out at the end, in the end of the credits. When you beat the game, it said no major league pitchers were harmed in the making of this game, except Joel Zumaya. He had it coming.
Oh my God.
So I mean, again, all in good fun. You know, I've seen Zumaya still be able to pitch pretty well after that, but it was a quirky little thing. So it's not really anything new, but, in this podcast, Merrick was saying that there was a top prospect for a, quote, very, very prominent NHL team. So let your rumor mill gears spin on what and who that could be. But he was saying how there's a prospect that is currently jeopardizing his career because he's playing too many video games. He's like playing himself to all hours, making himself exhausted, which, as we know, when you're exhausted, you don't do stuff very well. And especially when it comes to hockey, one of the most exhausting things on this planet, you know, having as much of your energy as possible is obviously the goal here. I know I just said goal. It is a pun. Get off my back. but I personally am a little concerned that this is still a problem. I'm curious to this prospect's age. I am very curious as to what sort of feedback and or what's the word? I struggle to think of the word, but basically something along the lines of, I wonder what people are telling him to try and get him to ease off, right? Because if it wasn't a problem, as you stated earlier, Peter, then we wouldn't be talking about this. But obviously the normal method, the regular stuff isn't working, Egon. What do we do next? So I am a gamer myself. I have played to all hours of the night. I know it is exhausting to do an all night session and stuff. I guess I'm just curious as to why the player is it's kind of sad to see that this is the, you'd like to think that hockey was the thing that's giving him the most interaction and enjoying stuff, but we don't know people's situations. We don't know what they're going through. So, and this isn't just a hockey thing, Pete. Very recently, David Price, pitcher for the hated and forever evil Boston Red Sox, was recently diagnosed with carpal tunnel, only after it came out that he'd been playing video games a bunch as well, because he's playing this crazy no-nonsense game called Fortnite. I myself haven't partaken yet. Maybe if I have partaken, maybe I wouldn't be recording this podcast with you right now because I'd be too busy playing it. But it's obviously a thing, Pete, right? This is obviously something that's out there. What are your thoughts on – so let's say you are a prospect in an organization's pipeline, and then you have different types of behaviors that are either encouraged or like, do you see this as something moving forward that teams will – you know, consider prior to drafting people? I mean, I know that there are certain aspects that they look in terms of off-ice behaviors, but, you know, do you think this is going to turn into a, teams have to now straight up say, hey, listen, we know a lot of people like to experiment with things, but we need you to be honest here. How often are you hitting the sticks, huh? How many times are you hopping on the joysticks, huh? 10 hours, 6 hours?
I mean, I don't think it's going to be a common thing. I don't think that this is like the beginning of a wave or something like that. But at the same time, I mean, being around teenagers all the time as a teacher, I'm really not surprised. Like, this doesn't take me completely by surprise just because I see how dependent they are on their phones. And it's like, if their phone isn't in there, like they sit down for class and they know I'm not going to let them use their phone during class, but they have to have it on their desk, which is like a foot closer to their face than if it were in their pocket or in their bag. And they have the same access to it because I'm not going to let them use it, but it's like having it there is comforting, you know? And so I do think that there is some type of, I don't know, you know, I'm always careful with these words just because of how serious a word like addiction is. You know, it's a very specific word, but I think maybe instead of using the word addiction, maybe if we use like dependence, which I know is very similar, and some people, you know, you could probably argue that they're the same thing, but I do see teenagers, and not just them, other people being way more dependent on things like their cell phone than, say, for example, when I was in high school. And I think the thing here is this is just something that he just stays up late. You know, it's not that it's specifically video games. It could be anything. It could be like he's addicted to reading books. You know, he just can't put it down. And like, because it's the same thing. It's not even that he's doing video. It's it's not the fact that it's video games. It's the fact that this person reportedly is just staying up all night and it's a lack of energy the next day. So, I don't know. I mean, it's an interesting thing, I guess. I know obviously people are going to start trying to guess who it is. We are not going to engage in that type of speculation because that just seems to be damaging for no really good reason. Like, even if, let's say, for example, let's say if we picked it, like, what good does that do? Like, how does that help anything?
Well, it doesn't help because all of a sudden you and I have people kicking down our doors knowing how the heck we would know such a thing.
Yeah.
Or then now they're asking us to predict the way the bingo balls are going to fall for the lottery or whatnot, because it seems odd. I think you're right, Pete. The article goes on to call it like a video game addiction. You know, like it feels like it's too strong, but you don't want to discount it, right? Like, you don't want to say it's like, hey, this is nothing. It's obviously right. Something, but maybe it's not as extreme to be put in the same bin as other things that do plague people's lives, right? And
sure,
you know, again, everything is for the most part a privilege when it comes to playing hockey, right? You're putting the work in. It's not a right. You still have to earn your spot. You know, yeah, you've been drafted, but that doesn't mean, you know, now you can just go carte blanche and eat all the ice cream you want and watch the reruns of Friends until your eyeballs pop out, right? Like, there is a commitment thing here. So I think this is actually also like a good lesson for the kid to learn, right? Like, hey, there's at what cost are these things affecting your life and all that? And we obviously wish him the best. We don't want to see anybody's careers get ruined because of too much video games. I mean, you know, I certainly don't want to be the first person to go on and like, yeah, he could have made the next great Batman movie, but Angry Birds, man, what are you going to do? So there's something to be said for, you know, at least talking about it, at least bringing it up.
Yeah.
I think you're right. Yeah, go ahead.
I just want to say, just to wrap this up, if that's okay with you.
No, that, yeah, go ahead.
That, you know, if anybody's out there is like, oh, come on, that's ridiculous. There's no way that somebody could develop, like I said, let's just call it a dependency. You know, you don't have to look any further to like cell phone games. Candy Crush, etc. Like, these companies, they do psychological research to figure out the reward, like the timing of the reward, the intensity of the reward to give a player to keep them playing, to make them want to, like, I just need to get to the next level. So certain video game companies, they really work on this. They, you know, there's the whole debate in the video game community about microtransactions or like loot boxes, where if you want to play this game and if you want to, you know, be as good as this guy, like, you need to spend $4.99. And because of that, I mean, I think there definitely is, you know, reasonable, you know, reason to believe that this, you know, this is accurate, that this young man could be just so dependent on this that he needs help to not play, I guess. You know, I do think that there is something to it.
Yeah, so, you know, again, it's something to keep an eye on, and we obviously would like to be vigilant and spreading the positive message that, like, hey, whatever's bothering you or whatever's affecting you, people care about you. You have places to go. You can do stuff. And we certainly hope that this guy can get over this, because, you know, hey, getting drafted by an NHL team, that is certainly an opportunity of a lifetime. We certainly don't want to see him waste it. So For the first time ever, as an extreme gamer myself, hey, just hop off the sticks and pick up a real one.
Yeah, there you go. All right. So thank you for listening to another episode of For Sure. Before we leave, we're going to have our Doc Emrick verb of the week, or verb of the episode. So what is it this time, Jay?
Because it is that high time of year, I'm not just going to do one, Pete. I'm going to do three. Okay. So in one sentence, I heard Emrick say, twisted, stashed, and sockered. Twisted, stashed, and sockered. Mm-hmm. Now, those are all different in their own right, but to hear all of them assembled in a sentence, like, in the zone, twisted around, back to the point, stashed, socked, like, you're trying to think, like, how, I can't even do that right now, but he's able to do that. So twisted, stashed, sockered. We really twisted this one, Pete.
Yeah.
We really stashed this one, and it's sockered along. Like, like, how do you even do that? So, again, today's Emrick verbs: twisted, stashed, sockered. which is funny because soccer means kicking, and a distinct kicking motion is no good in this game.
Well, maybe he's passing it.
Well, okay, but it's the playoffs, right? Anything goes.
Exactly.
as we said. There you go. So that's us, Pete, right? Yep. The First Year Podcast. Where can you find us? Where can they find us, Pete?
Well, that's a good thing you asked that, because you can follow us at Twitter. I am at P Flynn Hockey. Jay is at the Roar _ 24. Our podcast is at 200 Foot Pod. That's 200 FTPOD. And you can find you can get for sure merchandise like shirts and hoodies and good things like that. If you go to tinyurl.com/FERSHIRT, which is for shirt. All right. So thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you in 2 weeks.
For sure.
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 Sure.
For 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 sure.